The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 149 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a fun interview with Jeremy Hahn, the new artist on Constantine, and I hope you picked that book up this week because this is his first issue on the series. We talk a lot about the character and about how he got this assignment. A word of warning, this interview did take place a while back before the release date of Constantine number 18 was announced, and that's why he isn't exactly sure what date it'll come out when we talked, but I'm sure he knew shortly after that. Jeremy then talks about his time on Batwoman, reflects on Bad Karma and what we might see from that project in the future, and talks about other things he's got in the works that we should be aware of. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Jeremy Hahn, creator of the Constantine comic starting in October, who has been working on the Batman books, including Batwoman, and who has also developed this wonderful book called Bad Karma. How are you doing today, Jeremy?
Great, great. I just got back from a vacation for nearly 2 weeks, so I'm pretty relaxed.
You're mellow.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay. Well, let's talk about Constantine, because that's the big news. Especially the timing on this could not be better. You know, the Constantine show is going to start on NBC in late October, and you're taking over Constantine starting with number 18,
yeah,
which comes in October, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Did that happen by accident, or how did they decide to do that?
Well, I actually was at a convention, and I got a call from my editor on Batwoman asking if I would consider moving over to Constantine. And loving Batwoman as much as I had, it was a really difficult decision to make. But the funny thing, and the whole reason on their end that it even happened, was I was in the DC offices during the special edition in New York. And while we were in there, I was in the Vertigo office, and I was talking about what jerks they were for never giving me the chance to draw Hellblazer, which most anybody that really knows me and knew me growing up, that I was a huge Hellblazer fan. It was probably consistently my favorite book coming out. And I always kind of felt like that was the book that I was going to end up drawing. There was going to be that or some other Vertigo book. And up until that time, I had never done anything for Vertigo. And so she was like, hey, remember how we were talking about that in the office? What if you wanted to do the DCU version? And I eventually said yes.
Wow. Because well, I was reading your website, jeremyhaun.com, H-A-U-N, of course, people need to know. And you were talking about the fact about how much you love the character. You describe him in a really interesting way. You call him as just the best kind of bastard. Which I think is just a great way to describe John Constantine. Of course, now all the stuff he's been through with the Trinity War and the Trinity of Evil and all that good stuff. This has to be a John Constantine that's going to be a fun character for you to be involved with.
Yeah, well, I've known the current writer on the book, Ray Fox, for a few years. And everybody hated the idea of Constantine moving to the DCU. I mean, everybody. I did. I think Ray did to a degree. It was such a perfect run at Vertigo. And with a character that's that strong and a book that everybody kind of loved in their own way, there was not a way that you could do it at the DCU and have it be a win. And Ray really made it his goal working on the book to say, okay, it's not Hellblazer. It can't be Hellblazer. Well, you know, he can't say four words now that he could say before, certain things, but he can still be John Constantine. He can still be the glorious bastard that he always was. I mean, one of the fantastic things about Constantine is you love him, but you really don't like him. And, you know, he's the guy that you know will do whatever needs done to save himself and hopefully the world. But if you're standing too close, you're going to get burned. And with everything, with the Trinity War just happening and a lot of the stuff that Ray's been dealing with in the book, he's in an interesting place. Again, even though it's at the DCU, he's still just a bastard.
He's done terrible things to people.
Oh, yeah.
Even in the DCU. I mean, when I was reading the Trinity War, he is there doing terrible things to Zatanna. Mm-hmm. He's doing terrible. Who's he not doing terrible things to? That's the thing about his character. But, you know, you need somebody like that in today's comics. You need somebody who you don't know what this guy's going to do.
Well, and that's actually perfect. That's really the thing. We know that Batman's always going to do the right thing. We know that, of course, Superman's going to do the right thing. That's just his nature. John's going to do the right-ish thing. It's, but, you know, it's not going to be good. I mean, and even for as much as he obviously loves Zatanna, he's still willing to do these rough, compromising things to get done what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. The whole Zatanna-Constantine relationship to me is kind of intriguing. Because, you know, she's always been a straight-laced kind of a character before, and now all of a sudden she ends up with Constantine? That was kind of quite a jolt to me. I didn't realize that, you know, I didn't expect that at all, and so that was one of the things I really liked about it.
Yeah, well, I have a friend, and she was talking about their relationship, and she said, of course he's going to be sexy to her. Of course, what's that little bit of bad? It's that, fundamentally, Constantine is, to a degree, a good guy. I mean, he's a good guy, but he's a bad... It's that anti-hero thing. There's an attraction there. She was talking about it's kind of a similar thing to, I sound really nerdy with this one, but it's why Buffy likes Spike, being drawn to the dark side.
Well, women like the bad boys. We know that. We see that all the time. And so, you know, it's not surprising, but it was unexpected.
Yeah, that's how I landed my wife. I'm such a rogue.
So is he still going to be a part of Justice League Dark and all this as well?
I'm not sure. Right now, what's going on with the arc that we're doing, he's very separate from everything else. But the great thing about Justice League Dark is he can kind of bounce in and out, and there's always that magical threat to the DCU. And sometimes you've got stories that John can work in on his own, and then there's stuff that you need a bigger cast for.
Mm-hmm. So Ray's going to continue to be the writer then, as you go with
it. Yeah, yeah.
He does a very good job on supernatural type characters and situations, I've noticed, as I've been reading his stuff. So this is a good fit for him.
Yeah, yeah. He's not afraid to go dark. He always writes from a place of character first. And that's really nice. I think that all too often, supernatural stuff can seem really cheesy and a little bit off. You have to go from a place of character and really understand what's upsetting. Horror and that sort of thing doesn't necessarily work the same way in comics as it does in movies. So you approach it from a little bit different standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing that always worries me about magic, and I think DC's done a pretty good job of this, is that oftentimes it ends up being like the woo-woo ray.
Mm-hmm.
You get someplace, you write yourself into a corner, and you need to get out of it somehow. And so all of a sudden, this magic hasn't been able to do such and such before, but now, because you need to get out of it, it can.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Ray doesn't seem to do that, which pleases me no end. That was one of the things I always love about, like, the Dresden Files, is that you never get this stuff hitting you out of the blue. And I think that he's done a great job with the stuff in DC that I've been reading of his. And I think Constantine's going to be that kind of character. He's something of a Harry Dresden, a little darker Harry Dresden, which is kind of fun because I like Harry Dresden quite a lot. In fact, I'm in the middle of his latest book. But do you get any input on the story, or do you and Ray sit down and talk about what you're going to be doing as far as what's coming up?
We've talked about what's coming up. It was pretty set in stone whenever I came in. One of the great things that Ray does, though, and this is something that, as a guy that both write and draw different stuff on my own, Ray kind of does more of a plot for the issue. And so it's more Marvel style. And so he really lets me run with it and focus on the little bits of business that I want to do. There, in this first issue, there's I always like with Constantine, I enjoy the idea that he's half con man, half magician, you know. And so I was really trying to do something where he's doing a bit of sleight of hand in the background. And you can see that he's obviously casting some kind of spell, but he's really trying to get the guy to focus on his face. He's really not wanting him to look at his hands. And so while it was written as what could have been one panel or something like that, I broke it down and added four panels to the page just focusing on that little element.
Because just dying to ask you, don't want to get spoilers on this, but as far as being able to do the things you would like to see Constantine do, working with Ray, are you going to be able to do those kinds of things?
And in fact, I'm really excited about, now that he's seen what I'm doing on the first issue, I'm really excited about the second, you know, the next parts, because I think he's even going to push towards that more, really try to play to the strengths of what I do. And the best instances of working in comics are when it's true collaboration. I think you get these things where sometimes a writer wants to say, these are my words, this is my thing, completely do exactly to the letter of what I'm saying. And then you have the artists on the other hand that throw a fits and we're prima donnas and, you know, we're like, oh, we're going to change this and we're going to do exciting shots every time so we can sell pages or whatever it is. But that doesn't really work if it's too much of either of those. I think that when you have people that are excited about telling a story together and you can give and take, that's the best thing. I had a lot of that a couple of years ago. I was working on The Darkness with David Hine, and David and I had, during the tenure of working together on the book, we met three times. And he lives in England, so he was over for shows. And we would meet and talk about things. And it was almost like this process of, like, interviewing each other, kind of coming up with little things. Like, one of the craziest things that we came up with was because I asked the question, does the Darkness love Jackie? And that sparked a crazy, insane conversation about where we could take that. And those instances, though, where you could sit down and really talk about stuff and truly, without ego, just create and toss ideas out, that's the best comics could be.
Because, you know, there are some people, and we could name names, but we won't, who, when they write, it's gold dripping from their pen, you know, and anybody who does anything different than what they say just doesn't work. But, you know, that's the kind of storytelling, though. You can tell it when you read the art that it feels disjointed. But like what you're doing, what you do with Batwoman and what you're doing now, going to be doing with Constantine, I'm looking forward to. It's going to – just expecting that there's going to be a feel of unity in the whole thing and that there's going to be a way that the story's going to be told that we get into it.
Yeah.
That you guys don't get in the way.
Yeah. Well, I think another thing – I just thought of this, too. An advantage of guys like David Hine or Ray Fox is they're both artists, too. They, in the past and still to this day, you know, they both draw. And I think, again, there's an understanding there. There's, even as they're writing, they're painting a picture with the words. Sometimes you get situations where a writer, especially new guys, you know, and I always try to have as much patience as possible. You kind of have to, but new guys, sometimes they don't understand what can go into a panel or what can go on a page. They'll have, you know, 15 people interacting on a panel that's smaller than a post-it or something like that. But guys that have a visual sense are really, really wonderful to work with.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, I do have to ask you, because this thing, it concerns me that on some levels it's the best thing in the world that Constantine is going to be taken over by you right when the TV show is starting.
Right.
On the other hand, you might feel pressure, you know, to be able to, you're going to have to be competing with another Constantine.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old. I just don't worry. I don't worry about any of that stuff anymore so much.
Okay.
I think part of that is everything stands on its own. I love comics and movies just as much as the next guy, TV series. I'm a pop culture junkie, just like the rest of us. And I think that one of the things that we tend to do sometimes is we get so upset that everything isn't exactly as it should be. Everything isn't exactly from one medium to the next. That's not this because of this, this, and this. And there definitely are times where I can fall into that too. But I think everything has to stand on its own. I think that loving Hellblazer and then being upset because Keanu Reeves played Constantine in the movie and he was American. I mean, it's, look, I watched the movie and I let it stand on its own, and I liked some things about it, and there were other things that I didn't care for. But ultimately, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've got projects that are in various stages of development of my own, that when the producers come to me and they say, hey, there's this thing, we'd like to change the lead, we'd like to make him this or this, or they would like to take it more into a comedic route, or whatever it is. I have to find that the only thing that I can do is the comic was the comic. Mm-hmm. I already made my thing, I told my thing, and I just have to let things go.
Mm-hmm. Now, from my understanding, I thought that John Constantine was going to be in the Justice League Dark movie as well.
I'm not sure.
That's kind of up in the air. Are you going to watch the show?
Yes. I'm trying to figure out exactly how I'm going to do it. I'm excited to see it. That initial press photo of everybody standing together and the guys playing Constantine, I mean, it was spot on perfect, you know, the look. I haven't followed much since then with it. I usually wait for a DVD on stuff. I'm just weird. I watch stuff on Netflix and I watch stuff on DVD, and that's mostly how I get exposed to stuff. But this, I may have to look into getting Hulu or something like that so I can actually watch it.
Because if anybody from Warner Brothers is listening, I have a suggestion. And I never understand why comic companies don't do this. In the middle of Constantine, there should be a commercial for the book.
Yeah.
This should be a commercial that's saying, you know, you like Constantine here? You even enjoy the comic. Try this comic book.
Yeah.
You know, here's a place to get your local comic shop and all that stuff. Even during The Walking Dead, they don't show commercials for the comics, which I can't understand for the life of me.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect opportunity to promote that comic.
Yeah. I would have to assume that maybe with that, it's the cost of airtime, maybe. You know, still, I would think, like, maybe they're still having to pay advertising rights for stuff like that. I don't know.
But it's their show. It's like selling to their sister. I mean, you know, how do you, you know, don't understand that. You should be able to do something like that. Because let's face it, if you've taken a comic book character and you put them onto the television, you ought to be able to promote that character in the original medium and where he comes from. I don't get that, but that just may just be me.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I agree. And I would love to see. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, maybe that's something we're building toward more and more. As I was flying to Hawaii for vacation, on the way out they showed Captain America 2, and on the way back they showed Amazing Spider-Man 2. And I was sitting there, I was thinking about it. I have two young boys and they were watching both movies, and I was thinking about when we were kids, how mind-blowing it would have been. I mean, you know, good, bad, whatever you feel about different movies. You know, the idea that yesterday I took the boys to see Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, this stuff is out there everywhere, and it's becoming so much more prevalent. And I think that as we continue on, if we're making the right decisions, I think that the comics are only going to continue to grow. And if you look at the statistics right now for mm-hmm. growth in comics, you know, we were pretty gloom and doom a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. We were really, really worried about mm-hmm. these things are growing more and more. And I think it's going to be continuing the kind of cross-media promotion and hopefully getting the stuff like having, you know, the midpoint on a show like Constantine or The Flash or whatever it is, showing ads for the comics themselves and really continuing to push that.
Because even like on Arrow, for example, the writers from the Arrow show on the CW, which, by the way, does not feel like any show I've ever seen on the CW before, are taking over the Green Arrow comic.
Right.
So the line between comics and television is blurring dramatically. And then there's rumors now that Marvel's going to switch over their comics. They're going to live in the movie universe.
Yeah.
I haven't ever seen a formal announcement about it, but everybody's talking about it. So I'm just kind of fascinated by that. And just asking you, I mean, if the TV show were to take off and they were to come to you, we want you to be more like the TV show. How would you respond to something like that?
I don't know. I've done a few projects that were directly tied to TV shows. I did a Chuck comic book a few years ago during the series and things like that. And that was kind of cool, but I don't know about, again, it might be kind of hard for me to deal with the idea of being given like, well, can you draw in more like the guy on the show or something like that? But then, honestly, the dude on the show looks like John Constantine. One of the things that I feel like, for good, for bad, whatever it is, as we're making these corporate comics, one of the hard things that we have to deal with is that things are going to change and things are going to be linked in across media, you know, maybe sometimes more than we would like, for the good, for the bad. And I think that one of the things that I've had to come to terms with was I love drawing these heroes. I love drawing these icons of my childhood. They're wonderful things. But I'm just helping tell a story to the best of, you know, as much as I'm allowed to. But then if I want to tell something that's ultra specific, then I can go elsewhere and do that. That's one of the gifts that we're given right now with the creator-owned boom. If I want a character that does insane stuff and dies in the third issue or something like that, you know, I can do that, and I can put that somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the idea of having one toe in either arena. I like drawing Batwoman and Satine and the Riddler and crazy stuff like that. But I also like telling stories my way, and I'm going to continue exploring both.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing. That flexes your creative muscles in many ways. And I don't understand a person who only wants to do one or the other. Sometimes it's nice to play in somebody else's sandbox. They've set the rules, and it gives you a chance to try to live within the structure that someone else has done. And that's always great fun. But on the other hand, you want to do something wild and crazy that only you can imagine, and that's just as much fun, seems like.
Oh, yeah. You definitely, you're a little bit more open-minded than some people tend to be. I think that sometimes there's a resistance to creators wanting to do both or one or the other, kind of however it is. Mm-hmm. Some people really expect that if you're not just doing creator-owned stuff, you're selling out. Mm-hmm. Or I think that there is a lot more to any of this than readily meets the eye. I think that we're feeding our families. We're doing the only, to a degree, sometimes the only thing we're good at. There's a lot that goes into making comics, a lot that goes into why we do the things we do. But I don't know a single creator out there, and now I'm going to think of one later, but I don't know a single guy out there that literally just doesn't care. Everybody I know has so much reverence for these characters and for making comic books and for the medium itself.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, if we didn't care, if we didn't have the comic book bug,
mm-hmm.
we could go make so much more money somewhere else. I have a buddy that we were all talking in group online, and he was talking about what he made doing a video game project. Mm-hmm. And I almost cried. I was like, what am I doing? But like I said, we've got the bug. We want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to do this.
Well, you do that. We buy the books because we've bitten the bug on the other side. We want to see what stories you're going to tell. And that's the great fun for us, to take a comic, and when you start to open up the book, you have no idea what's coming usually. And there's nothing more fun than that, and to dive into the story and just lose yourself from the real world for a little while and get lost in this wonderful story and to do these wonderful characters like you do. And see, the Constantine, I think I'm looking forward to it, number 18. Do you know which week of the month that's going to come out?
I'm not sure. For some reason, I really think that they said it was going to come out either the week of the show or the week before the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be ideal, because if you notice, they had Batman's birthday recently, mm-hmm. and anniversary, and they had Batman 33 come out on the same day that was Batman Day in the comic stores. Mm-hmm. And all these things were going on, these multiple covers and things like that. It was just this huge party going on. And it would be a wonderful thing to put that together with Constantine, to have it come out, if not before, the same time that the show's going to hit the air, because that would be the interest is going to be the highest then. And, again, if anybody from Warner Brothers is out there, you know, listening, please consider this, because it works so well with Batman. Do this with Constantine and see if you can't, number one, help the show, and number two, make sure the comic is a big success too.
Well, yeah. And I think that I was really honored being invited to come onto the book, given the eyes that are going to be on it. It's them having a lot of faith in what I do and being excited about me bringing something to the book, letting me come on. They wanted somebody good on it. And like I said, I'm honored to be able to do that.
Well, they made an excellent choice, I think. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah, hopefully I don't screw it up.
No, I think it's going to be great. You're really anxious to see it and see what kind of wonderful stuff you guys are going to do. Now, since you recently left the Batwoman title after being on there a year, do you want to kind of sum up your feelings? Now, it's been a little time since the public announcement came out that you were going on. What's your feelings now at this point about the Batwoman book? Do you intend to read it going forward, or do you kind of, when you leave a character, kind of let the character go on their own?
I don't think I can stop reading it.
Okay.
From the moment that Kate Kane came on the scene as Batwoman, I really enjoyed the character. I liked the look. I liked the strength of the character. I really applauded the willingness to have a strong female lesbian lead. I felt like they were, you know, sometimes you get strong female characters. You hear a lot lately about Trinity Syndrome and stuff like that. Kate really is a strong character that backs it up. She's not a character that's an idealized version in any way. She's got her flaws. She's got positives and negatives. And she just, I don't know, she's amazing. She's a real rarity. So, yeah, I'm going to definitely read the book going on. I love what Mark is doing on the book, Mark Andrico. And, you know, it's hard because I think that I knew where things were going with the book, and I wanted to be a part of that. But I also know that, for me, a lot of what I really wanted to focus on with the book from day one was a love story between Kate and Maggie. And I just felt like these were characters that were really three-dimensional in that way. And Kate Kane is as exciting as Batwoman for me. And I got to tell the story that I wanted to tell there. And it's hard leaving, but I do feel good about what we did.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you took over the book, there was some reaction, because the word was that they were going to be married, and the DC kind of put the kibosh on that, and people said that they were unhappy with that, although DC didn't say it had to do with the fact that they were lesbians. It had to do with the fact that with marriage.
Right.
They weren't all for that. And so you came in at a kind of a rough time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody wanted to sell that book. Yeah, I don't know that I've ever been hated for coming onto a book before. But so people said some nasty things, but, you know, people say nasty things every day on the Internet. So
welcome to the Internet.
Yeah.
That's what it's for. But now that you're leaving, there's a lot of feeling of regret that you're going, because you did a great job on the year that you were there. And you won over a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. The Batwoman audience is fantastic. There was so much reservation about me coming onto the book. And I came on, and within a couple of issues, was so welcomed. I had fans, especially just a half dozen fans that I had the opportunity to meet at shows that really made me feel so welcome. And you can't beat that.
That's great. Because, you know, not everybody can do that, hate to say this, but some people come on and they kind of crash and burn stuff. They try to destroy the book as much as they can before they get off of it. But you guys did, I think, a very nice job of carrying forward with the individuals and the characters and the stories. And it wasn't the same art style that we'd had on the book before, but it felt strong to me, and it felt very action-packed while dealing with the characters as well. So I think you guys did a great job in storytelling, both in scripting and in the art. So I think you should be congratulated, especially coming in when you did.
Well, thanks. You know, earlier you asked about feeling intimidated about Constantine, about the show, and I was thinking, as you asked that, I was like, look, I've lived through following J.H. Williams on a book. I can pretty much live through anything. But I mean, look, Jim, he's one of the most prolific, talented illustrators in the industry. Everything that he touches is beautiful. It's just intimidatingly so. And I am creative of what I am, and I could never do what he does. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just had to let it go a little bit. I got a lot of questions about, are you going to do the kind of thing that he did? And I think that would be a lie in a way. I'm never going to be J.H. Williams. If I sat down and spent 3 months an issue trying to hone perfectly everything and try to emulate everything he does, I would never be anything more than a pale shadow of that. And there's no point in being that. I think that the way to show reverence for him and for the work that he did on the book and for the character is to kind of do my thing my way and just try to go on.
I'm glad you did that, because Batwoman has been a great comic in the way that you have made it yours. A year now, people are grieving that you're leaving. That's a sign that you have done a good job on it. And, you know, J.H. Williams is probably always going to be remembered because he has this unique way of doing things. Mm-hmm. But you did a good job, and you brought everything to your strengths, and you made it a book that people wanted to read based on what you could bring to it. And that's always the way, I think, for an artist and a writer to do. Don't try to be Grant Morrison. Don't try to be John Byrne. Be yourself and do the best that you can do. And I think that you've proven that to be true, that you can do that kind of thing and make a book your own, even if you're following somebody who maybe have better name recognition that you had at the time.
Right, right. Well, and I think that we all love these different artists.
Right.
I probably read between 25 and 40 books a week myself. I'm a huge fan, too. And you can always tell when somebody is doing their thing. You know, it shows. I'd rather have that anytime than have somebody just trying to rehash what came before.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that Alan Moore changed comics was because he told things his way. The reason that Frank Miller came in and did things like Year One and Born Again, these things really were done the way that they wanted to. You know, they weren't compromising. Look, we may never have another, hopefully we do, but we may never have anything that changes the face of comics the way those guys did. Again, maybe not, but we all owe it to ourselves and to those guys to push forward and do things our way and just have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you're doing that, because we need more people to do that. I do think there are too many cookie cutter people out there who do things the way that can't you do this like Neil Adams kind of stuff, you know, that people get asked. And I would much rather you be you and let those people who want to be Neil Adams kind of do their pale imitations of Neil Adams.
Right.
But your Batwoman was great fun. And, you know, I have to tell you this. You brought back the most despised character from before the New 52. And I actually was intrigued by what you were doing with it. And that was Nocturna. Hated her with purple passion. I always thought when she floated off in that balloon in the red sky that we should never, ever have seen her ever again. And you guys brought her back and made her really interesting. So I wanted to let you guys know that I thought that.
Well, yeah. When they said they were bringing her in, I was like, wait, what are you doing? Come on. But I think that, yeah, she was a lot of fun. And drawing her and Night Thief together, I really enjoyed their relationship. One of the great things that I think I got to do in the series was draw these good, bad, interesting, fun, beautiful women. And that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, we'll miss you on Batwoman, but we're really looking forward to Constantine, I have to say. I can't wait for it. But before I let you go, I do want to talk with you about the fact that I saw you at Florida Supercon. You did this wonderful panel with Tony Bedard, and I went back to your booth. You gave me this wonderful book, this 200-page hardcover called Bad Karma. And the more I look into it, I read the book and I really enjoyed it. Lots of little short stories, compared to the longer tales that we get in comics. It was nice to read something that had sort of an overarching theme, but yet had smaller parts to it that you didn't have to necessarily know the whole thing, what was going on. What I was really interested in, this was a Kickstarter, and it seems like these days there's a lot of comics going through the Kickstarter process. And you guys went through that, and you got twice of what you were expecting.
Right.
As I was looking on it. As far as like Bad Karma goes, do you want to talk a little bit about that, how that came to be and what the story is, and maybe we might see more Bad Karma in the future?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. What the project was, myself, B. Clay Moore, Alex Grecian, and Seth Peck, we're all friends from relative Kansas City area. And we've known each other for a good while now, over a decade. And they work primarily as writers. Or, well, they're writers. And I mostly do art. But they started talking about this writing collective, and they wanted me to be a part of it as I was doing more and more writing myself. Part of what we wanted to do was just, in some ways, just have an excuse to work together and to hang out. Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez did this movie From Dusk Till Dawn together. And in an interview, they talk about that really the only way in film that you get to hang out with your friends a lot is to work together on a film project, because then you get to really hang out. And there's a truth of that in comics, too. It's almost like if you want to be able to travel with your friends to shows, if you want to be able to hang out, if you want to be able to do things, you kind of have to figure out a way to work together. And so we decided to do this writing collective, and the book kind of came out of that. There was just this conversation about, well, maybe we should do anthology. I mean, it's an anthology, but it's kind of not. We wanted to do something where just the four of us were writing, and then we brought in other artists to, you know, I would draw some stuff, but then other guys would come in and do some stuff too. And, you know, we just have fun with it. And Kickstarter was new at the time. Relatively new, I guess. You know, it was a little over a year old by that time. But it was something interesting, something that was having some real success. It was a way to specifically reach an audience where you can control every aspect of it. And one of the things that we wanted to do, one of the things I've always been kind of obsessed with, is the merchandising aspect of any project that you do. Any comic book you do, you can, you know, go and you can do a graphic novel. You know, you could do it. You might maybe even do a hardcover, but you but you can't always, just because of the outline expense, you can't always do a 200-page hardcover graphic novel with a optional slipcover and a foldout and prints and t-shirts and all of this crazy stuff. And so it was an opportunity for us to kind of build a brand all at once. And yeah, it worked really well.
It's a beautiful volume. It's larger than comic size, kind of a white background with sort of a dark bluish kind of a feel to, behind the words Bad Karma and other things. And it's just, you know, the art style changes from story to story. The story focus changes from story to story. So it truly is, as you said, an anthology. It's something different than what we're used to reading. You know, you pick up Batman. Batman has to start a certain place and end a certain place so somebody else can possibly pick it up, should something happen. But with Bad Karma, it's a very interesting set of stories having to do with a certain circumstance. Do you want people to know what that is, what the whole situation is, at least at the beginning of the book?
Well, yeah, obviously calling the group Bad Karma and the book Bad Karma, that's kind of a theme. That's kind of a theme of it, you know, karma and things not necessarily going well. But what we had was, we wanted to do something that was kind of tied together loosely based on this nefarious group, the Kraken Corporation. And this group somehow broke time and, to a degree, reality. And so we're able to tell all of these stories where, you know, you'll have like Clay's story is a detective story, you know, set in the 50s, earlier than that, I think, the 40s. Anyway, but he's got a detective story. My story was very much a modern science fiction-ish called Chaos Agent. And then Alex Grecian did a story that was about a time-traveling this guy that basically gets versions of himself at different ages to jump through time and solve this mystery. And then Seth Peck's story was, it's a Victorian, almost Lovecraftian story. So we did all these different things, but the theme kind of runs through them. And then in the background of all of these is this threat of the Kraken Corporation. Mm-hmm. And you realize that there shouldn't be any reason that in we tied everything together with a story called The Ninth Life of Solomon Gunn. And you mm-hmm. realize that this guy is literally, in the sense of like the old song of the Highwayman, mm-hmm. kind of existing throughout time and mm-hmm. jumping throughout time. And so we see him in feudal Japan, and then we see him in, you know, the Old West, and then we see him watch one of the shores. You know, a Viking stands up. But all through it, you realize that the Kraken Corporation exists. And this corporation by no means should have existed in the Viking era, but somehow they do. And that's what we were kind of doing. And then mm-hmm. all these stories have the potential to be more. Mm-hmm. Alex is working on his story and taking that where he can. And I'm doing some things with Chaos Agent. There's even some of the prose stuff we're even developing a bit more. But the fun thing is we can take it wherever we want to. And definitely working on volume 2.
Oh, great.
It's going to have some of the characters from the first one in it, but it's going to be a lot of new stuff too. Mm. But again, it's going to kind of tie into what's come before to a degree. And that's the fun thing. You know, we can tie it back and kind of create our own little world to play in.
Well, it's a lot of fun to read. It was a great variety to the reading. And I'm a big believer in variety. So it was so nice to read something that had a lot of different kinds of stories in the same book. But I still couldn't put it down once I got started with it because it was great fun. Okay. So
cool.
It's such a good book. And so I'm glad to hear there's an O2. Are you going to go through Kickstarter again with that?
Probably so. We're talking about it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think about Kickstarter people kind of misunderstand is some people feel like it's, you know, kind of a handout thing, or it's kind of a little bit shifty. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked really hard to make sure that it was completely on the up and up, that we were fulfilling things and doing things as we said we would, giving a product that we could truly be proud of. Mm-hmm. But invariably, everything ends up being more expensive than you expect. And with shipping and stuff like that, even though we got double what we asked for, mm-hmm. we asked for 18.5 and mm-hmm. we got, you know, right at 37, we were barely able to pay for all the shipping and everything we needed to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of work goes into it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we were very, very tempted to do it again just because we figured out kind of a lot of the pitfalls that can come with it, stuff like that.
You learned from the first time, yeah. So it'll be hard. Now, is the hardcover volume still available?
Yeah, actually, we have it available. We really try to make it as easy as possible. So we put it up on Amazon, or you can just get it directly through us at badkarmacreative.com. Comixology has a digital version that we produced. Some of the kids like to do that nowadays.
And, the kids.
And,
yeah. Great. Well, any idea when you're going to start to get up back up on Kickstarter, or is that kind of still in
development? We're still in development on it. One of the things that we really wanted to do with this one was make sure that we had a little bit more done beforehand. We figured it into the schedule really well and basically got the book out to everyone as we said we were going to. Mm-hmm. But it basically just about killed us. It was it was there for about a month and a half, 2 months. It was just working on Bad Karma all the time. Everything from drawing to finishing the files to getting everything sent off to stuffing the envelopes and getting the books out. It takes a while. So this time we want to make it a little bit easier on ourselves and not quite, you know, I want to have a nice full life. So the idea of killing myself doing this is
not this time. You want to don't want to do
right,
that
again. Right, exactly.
Okay. So we've got Constantine coming up and Bad Karma 2 hopefully coming. There are other projects that you're doing that we should be aware of?
Man, I can't say too much. I've got a thing that next year is going to be coming out from Vertigo. Oh. So finally, I'm getting to work with those guys.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, probably not supposed to say much about it, so I won't. But I will say that there is that. And then I've got actually, in 2015, following the Vertigo stuff, and then as I'm doing the Constantine stuff into 2015, I'm going to be doing more creator-owned stuff.
Ooh.
And that's going to be a big focus for the next couple of years.
Hmm.
If you look at the stuff that guys like Rick Remender with Black Science and Lowe and a lot of the things he's doing right now, and mm-hmm. Jonathan Hickman, these guys, they're having fun and they're making books their way. And I'm going to be doing a lot of that, too.
Oh, good. I'd be interested to see what kind of projects you have in mind, because you have a very interesting way of looking at things. And you talk about Remender and his Low and his Black Science. It's interesting because he's known for superheroes so much of the time, and yet when he gets the chance, he dabbles in science fiction. You know, we talked a little bit about expanding your horizons and being able to look at different kinds of things. It would be really interesting to see what kinds of things you have in mind, that what kind of stories you'd like for us to read.
Yeah, well, I think that that's one of the joys of creator-owned stuff. Like Rick doing so much science fiction stuff. I love crime stuff. I can talk about this to a degree. But one of the things that I am doing is a couple years ago, I did a book called The Beauty at Top mm-hmm. Cow. Mm-hmm. And The Beauty was part of pilot season. It was the winter that year of pilot season.
Oh.
And because of my schedule working on The Darkness, and then once my exclusive was up there, going back to D.C., we weren't able to actually ever get to it the way we wanted to. But The Beauty is this weird book about just a couple of years down the road, there is an STD called The Beauty that makes you beautiful. And
oh.
And so everybody would kind of want it.
Wow.
Because we could all be pretty people. We just get this, and suddenly we're models. And then things go really bad with it.
Of course.
Because they have to.
Of course.
And so it's kind of a police procedural story about these police that are assigned to beauty-related crimes and stuff like that. So we're going to be wrapping that up. I co-wrote that with a buddy of mine, Jason Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
He's my local comic shop owner, and we've known each other forever. And he's a fantastic writer on his own, and I'm going to drag him kicking and screaming into comics whether he wants it or not. But yeah, we co-wrote that and I drew it, and we've written the majority of the rest of the series now. We kind of wanted to hold off as much as possible on putting anything out until we had a bunch done, and I'm well into drawing more of it. And so that's going to be one of the things for 2015.
Well, I highly recommend to people, if you see the name Jeremy Hahn on any books, be sure to pick it up, because you're going to get good art and a good story and good storytelling. So, Jeremy, it's great fun talking with you. Man, I'd love to do this again sometime and be able to catch up with you as some other projects come to light.
Yeah, definitely.
Talk to you about, man, you're doing a wonderful job. I can't wait for Constantine. I'm just dying to see it. So it's good talking with you. And, man, a lot of success as you go forward, both in creator-owned and in non-creator-owned.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
And that's it for this episode. Next week, episode 150 with a special interview, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.